As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. I'm Ian Irving and we've got the whole gang with us again. Today, after the festival season came to an end and Laurie Whitwell eventually found his way out of his wellies. Did you have a nice time at Glastonbury?
I had a lovely time and I didn't even need my wellies, Ian. It was that sunny.
Oh?
There was threats of rain.
Is it Glasto without wellies?
I've been to three now and I've not needed them once. So I don't know if I'm a lucky charm or if it's not a proper Glastonbury because I'm going there. But no, it was just dusty, a little bit of rain. My Adidas trainers got a lot of work wearing them, a lot of stepping, as I said to you off camera, 57,000 steps on one day.
57,000 steps, people, beat that.
200,000 across the whole festival. It was brilliant, though. I'm trying to find a tenuous football link, and I think the best I can do is Sam Fend on the pyramid stage and his saxophonist wearing a Newcastle shirt and lots of Geordies flying about. That was quite good fun. But no,
the fact that your go-to reference for the weekend was how many steps you did concerns me slightly, to be honest, but I'm guessing you did a good time.
I think, do you know, the main part of it is actually the two-stepping whilst I'm at the stages. It's not even the walking from stage to stage. So I'm kind of cheating there, I reckon. But I didn't do any two-steps when I was in the rabbit hole for Paolo Nutini. That was my highlight. I'm just going to squeeze that one in there because I've never seen him before live. Been a fan of his since I was at uni and These Streets came out and he's just come back with loads of new music and he was absolutely incredible. So hopefully I can see him again in future.
You'll get a chance at some point, Laurie. You tend to find a way, just like when you were chasing those Harry Styles tickets that time. We discovered last week as well, actually, when we were chatting, that Carl and Andy have also been to a festival over the summer together, and they'd not mentioned it on the pod yet. So, Carl, spill the beans.
Yes, I had my one big holiday year, went to Primavera Sound in Barcelona, and obviously I was in Barcelona, so I sent the main man, Andy Mitten, a text, or rather he sent me a very lovely voice note and invited me out for a civilized lunch. And a walk around town and got a potted history.
Civilized?
It was quite civilized. We were drinking Vichy Catalan, which is a Spanish mineral water that has a very weird taste that I can't really describe properly. And then Andy went to Dua Lipa at Primavera with his two daughters, which I thought was brilliant.
Andy went to Dua Lipa, right? Andy, is that true?
Yeah, my daughter wanted to see Dua Lipa. And obviously I went along and watched her. And I might have listened to her as well, but I definitely watched her.
I thought she might be a bit LFC for you, mate, to be honest.
Don't even know what that means, so yeah, maybe she is, but she was bang on. Listen, my daughter knew all the acts. I gave it the big one. I can go to a festival. First 2 days, I lasted till 4 a.m. Third day, I just thought, I cannot do this anymore. And didn't go. And my daughter's just like laughing at me. But yeah, it was great. I keep feeling good that we can do these things again after a couple of years of not being able to do it. Same with Glastonbury, Primavera. And I think you need a break to disconnect from football, and definitely did that as I was dancing to Dua Lipa, as a lad came up to me and said, "Can I ask you about the Athletic?" Really?
That's really intense.
If anyone's wondering what that noise is in the background of Andy's recording, he's actually by the sea, so we can hear the waves lapping on a beach somewhere. Where are you, Andy?
That's the Adriatic. I'm in Montenegro. I've come here for a few days to spend some time with someone who I'm not going to name, but he's a very, very, very good football player.
Ooh, intriguing.
There you go.
Intriguing indeed.
Laurie, do you want to guess who it is?
Well, I could guess, but I don't want to spoil the surprise for everybody. And Andy's threatened me with pain of death if I reveal it on Talk of the Devil. So I'm going to leave it there because I know he's got ways of finding out where I am in the world, even if I manage to move on from here.
I say one thing about Montenegrin footballers, and it's not him who I'm meeting, or I might be meeting this guy later on. The best individual performance I've ever seen at Old Trafford was a Montenegrin called Dejan Savicevic for Red Star Belgrade against Manchester United in the 1991 European Super Cup final. And anyone who was there that night, including all the players, would probably agree with that.
I will have to check out footage of that, as it was... I mean, if it was Super Cup 91, I would have been 4 months old. So sorry about that, Andy, if I've made you feel older.
Right, we better move on swiftly then. We need to talk about the football. I seem to say this phrase every single week, don't I, when I'm trying to move things on. But we do need to talk about the football because Manchester United might actually be signing a footballer, Laurie Whitwell. You've been writing about it. Are they?
I think it's pretty much done, isn't it? Tyrone Malacia, the left-back from Feyenoord. He'd been talked about early in the summer window, but not really a priority position, and Frenkie de Jong was the priority. Central midfield was what Erik ten Hag wanted to strengthen. I think everybody can look at that position and think that's where United need to add numbers and quality. I mean, particularly defensive midfielder, Carl. I know we'll get onto that, but I know Frenkie de Jong isn't quite that player. But Tyrone Malacia is the one that seems to be most advanced. I wouldn't be surprised if there's an announcement in the coming days. I think Leon's interest in him perhaps hurried the situation along, and you can perhaps applaud United for waiting for them to agree a fee with Feyenoord, coming in at the last minute and then adding a little bit more on top and getting the deal sorted. Leon have pulled out of the race now because they acknowledge that United is the favoured destination for the player. So listen, it's a signing, and you know, obviously I've been away at Glastonbury and there was quite a funny couple of messages from people that were connected with United who sort of messaged me saying, you know, you be careful, you might be at the pyramid stage when Macca's, you know, getting up to Hey Jude and we drop the bomb that, you know, we're signing Frenkie de Jong. And I kind of replied saying, don't worry, I'm not going to hold my breath. And, you know, I've come back and lo and behold, no one's signed yet. So at least this is somebody. Because I do think there's a, you know, we wrote this piece before I went away, there's a great value in having a player in the building. It spreads confidence amongst your teammates, spreads confidence amongst the manager and future signings. United still haven't done that. Whether or not Tyrone Malacia is that kind of player that can at least start the ball rolling on further signings, I don't know. But clearly he's going to be someone that rivals Luke Shaw for that left-back slot. It means Alex Telles' position is in doubt a little bit. Also Brandon Williams, you know, what will happen with him? He might well go out on loan again. So it's an interesting signing, but one that doesn't really answer all the questions that we've got at the moment.
No, that is true. And he's a name from left field, really, as well. Not in terms of the position on the pitch, just the fact that he's not necessarily a name that a lot of Manchester United fans knew a great deal about. Of course, he's coming from Feyenoord. He made 50 appearances in all competitions for them last season, a team who finished third in the Eredivisie. He's got 5 caps for Holland as well, having made his international debut last year. Do we know any more about him, Carl, than that?
I am learning at a very quick pace.
So excellent.
I've gone back and watched some of his games in the Europa Conference League, and I rewatched part of the Europa Conference League final against Roma. I believe he featured in that a little bit. He has made leaps and bounds last season. It feels weird calling 21-22 last season, but he's become...
Laurie's been doing it for a while, don't worry.
Did it on the day after the season finished.
True. You want to get rid of whatever happened to United, don't you? He's made leaps and bounds in the attacking sense. Really played a lot more like a left wing back on Arne Slot. Forgive me on the pronunciation there. So very good attacking play. I think Laurie's correct in that he'll most likely try and compete with Luke Shaw rather than replace Luke Shaw as the starting left back this season. I wouldn't be surprised if we are talking, you know, this time next year or you know, just before the next Euros in 2024, and he might be the starting left back. I think he's got a lot of the tools there. And if Ten Hag's, you know, decided he's the one, then he's good.
Andy, this sort of ties into what you've said a few times actually on the podcast, is that you're quite happy for United to sign players you've never heard of if you feel like the right work has been done and the manager wants him and there's a plan for these players. So this is the type of business that you were hoping United would do, is that right?
Yeah, and Erik ten Hag, having managed in that league, obviously knows him, and his opinion matters more than anybody else's here. Feyenoord are Ajax's main rivals. I did a book on Derby games years ago. It was one of the most fierce in the world. And if you can survive at that level and play in that game, then you've got something about you. So if a rival manager is looking at you as the opponent's left back and thinking, this guy's got it mentally, more power to his elbow. Great, get it done. 22 years old, he's established in the Feyenoord team. I'm seeing United being linked to players who are establishing themselves in top international teams. So he's coming into the Dutch team, levels are very high. My first reaction was, I don't know hardly anything about this player, but I like what I'm hearing about him. And if Erik ten Hag thinks he's the man, then great. And pretty uncertain Manchester United at left back and at right back. And there probably is a vacancy there. I'd still say that Luke Shaw is the default number one. But we have good seasons with Luke Shaw and we have injury hit seasons and never really had that level of consistency that we've had with great Manchester United fullbacks.
Yeah, that's fair. I think as well, the one thing about targeting a left-back, Carl, and you've written about the defence needing to improve after spending £200 million on centre-backs in recent years. The headline says that Ten Hag has to create a collective vision, and basically the idea is that the whole function of the team needs to be better defensively. Go and check that out if you want to know more about that. But is left-back maybe the one area that wasn't the most obvious to target in terms of improving, or am I overlooking something?
It was a position that I could see Ten Hag wanting to improve next summer. I think I mentioned previously that I thought Ten Hag would most likely run it back with Luke Shaw, probably promote Brandon Williams ahead of Alex Tillys, and see how that would run for at least the first half season. That he's been so proactive here is encouraging. It's also a pretty good indication of how he wants to play in wide areas in particular. I think such is the attacking endeavour from Tyrell, it should pose good news for anyone who wants to play on left wing, because he's very good at making those sorts of overlapping runs that Alex Tellis was not good at all last season. So I think if you're Jadon Sancho and you like an overlapping fullback, then this is the sort of purchase that will get you quite excited, and also probably shows you that, you know, possible plans for what Ten Hag wants to do at right back as well. So yeah, useful signing.
Okay. You got a piece coming out on him then, Carl, at some point?
Yes, I'm going to try and get this one out for the middle of the week next week. I'm watching as many Eredivisie games as I can between now and Monday.
We'll keep an eye out for that then. Brilliant. Laurie, I can hear people shouting at us because someone mentioned De Jong before and didn't really say anything else. So we need to say something else about Frenkie de Jong, don't we? The latest story that you've written, and I love how creative this language is now getting. Manchester United continuing positive talks with Barcelona over transfer. We've had edging closer. We've had nearing agreement. I'm trying to remember what else we've had. But
advancing.
Are you running out of ways to describe how close this deal is?
Yeah,
now?
I mean, it is, you know, you can probably criticise journalists for getting overly invested in the jargon around transfers, for sure. I think it's a whole lexis to itself, isn't it? The way that transfer news is reported and how you edge it along a little bit. So forgive me for perhaps not, I guess, expressing entirely where I think this is at. But listen, I think that the news that came out on the Tuesday, wasn't it? And I was hoping for like a nice sedate ease back into reality after the kind of Festival of Glastonbury. But it was the fact that there was progressive talk clearly on the fact that there's a guaranteed sum of money that United are willing to give, that Barcelona are now willing to accept. And it's 65 million euros is what we think it's going to end up being around. Now, you talk to people at Barcelona and they still insist that they ultimately want more than that, because they want to get to a figure of 80 million euros guaranteed, basically, that allows them to record the Frenkie de Jong sale as a profit. And I think Andy can obviously touch upon that a little bit more as well. So listen, I don't know how it'll ultimately shake down, but it felt like they'd had a good number of conversations basically on that Monday, where you come away from it and thinking, okay, that's an advancement in the deal. Because before then, it was still a little bit unsure, will this actually happen? You know, we all expect the deal to happen, but at the moment, Frenkie de Jong's on holiday. You know, we see him posting pictures from Las Vegas. There was a story last night about the potential of him being unveiled though at the weekend at Old Trafford. I checked out a little bit, and I'd be surprised at that personally. But you know, clearly it's going one way, and I think that's the kind of emphasis of the story.
He's on holiday in Rhyl, and he's having a nice time. And Manchester United are pretty confident about the whole thing. United are pretty relaxed. I don't have a problem if a player is hard to get. Alex Ferguson always said, if someone's hard to get, that means they're good. He was always suspicious if a player was easy to get. And too many times in the last decade, United have been offered players at the last minute, and they've been pretty easy to get. It's all been about numbers. Some of the best signings in United's history have been really thought out, difficult to get hold of. The fundamentals are, Barcelona want to sell, Manchester United have got the money to buy, and he's a cracking player. And Erik ten Hag wants him as his priority for Manchester United for next season. I think that Frenkie de Jong, well, I know he's been perfectly happy playing for Barcelona. I don't think he would have pushed for any move whatsoever. And that's where we are at the moment. I would expect the transfer to go through, but as we speak at the moment, it has not gone through.
Yeah, Nick Miller's written on The Athletic, Andy, about the idea of the deadline of the 30th of June for so many different things. We're hearing the Richarlison deal is edging closer, Laurie, and Tottenham are on the verge of signing him from Everton. And then that's related to June the 30th. Yeah, poised. That's related to June the 30th because apparently Everton need the money in so they can count it in this financial year. And also that then comes into a four-year period, which takes in the period of COVID. It's usually 3 years, but they've extended it because of all the effect of the pandemic. In terms of the financial fair play judgment and then restrictions that Everton may or may not face. Barcelona have also got a deadline of June the 30th for their finances, and Nick details that in the piece on The Athletic. So do you think there's anything in that in terms of De Jong, Andy? I know we're talking about United trying to exploit, in inverted commas, Barca's financial situation, but is there anything in the June the 30th thing?
Yes, I think there is. If you look at the date when Barcelona have signed players in recent years, July the 1st is more prominent than any other date in the calendar. And for Manchester United, I was told a month ago, a lot of staff are going to leave the club before June the 30th. So it's a financial year end, and I'm not an accountant, but I was always told it was significant. So I can't sit here now and say Frenkie's going to be getting the train from Rhyl to Manchester on the 1st of July, because I've got no evidence of that. But Barca have also got to do their transfer business. This isn't a club who don't want to sell. This isn't a hostile signing. They've got the targets, then they need money to get those targets in. So I do think it's significant, but I still wouldn't be surprised if we're talking in the next podcast and he hasn't signed. The lad's on holiday and he's got a contract which he's entitled to sit out if he wants to.
That's what it shakes down to, doesn't it? Whether or not United could have actually done this deal already and he'd be a United player and everyone knows that, and then he comes back from his holiday straight away to pre-season. If that could have happened and United are basically quibbling over 10, 15 million euro, then I would have said, is that really worth the hassle for it? You know, could you not just pay the money? Particularly when, you know, as we've been away, the dividends have gone out to the Glazer owners. And I know that's a really topic of issue for a lot of people. You know, when you can equate it very easily to money that's going out of the club to shareholders, you know, could you not just, you know, put that money to a player? So if that could have happened, then I think that is a mistake. If it really couldn't have happened and he was always going to wait until after his holiday to make a final decision on where he wants to go, then I understand why United are making, you know, the negotiations and you know, and kind of extracting this a little bit longer. But there is going to come a point where it's going to be an issue for United to not have him in the door. And what do they do with other signings? Okay, they've gone and signed Taro Malacia, but he's not going to be the definitive player this season. It seems like a good addition to the squad. Could be a really promising young player, as you say, Andy, 22, who's got room to develop. But there will come a point, you know, particularly on pre-season tour, where we're thinking, what is United's ambitions for this season? And is it being hamstrung by, you know, small increments in offers that are going into Barcelona?
Well, of course, you can keep a close eye on The Athletic for whatever creative language Laurie decides to describe this transfer progressing by. I'm sure there'll be updates in the coming days on that. If you're not a subscriber, you can go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod to get a subscription for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. You get full access to all our great writing, including all the transfer updates and ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcast as well, including this one. That's theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Sign up now.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So we're talking there about players who may be arriving at Old Trafford, but of course more space needs to be made in the Manchester United squad for more players to come in, despite Lowe's leaving on free transfers already. Carl, you've been writing about two of the players who seem to be going towards the exit door, Dean Henderson and Andreas Pereira. Both articles are up on The Athletic. Just give us some of the detail about these two and the position that they're in.
Dean Henderson looks to be one of the preferred transfer targets in Nottingham Forest. It seems to be he's going to be a loan deal initially. It'd be fun if Nottingham Forest could stay up next season. And I think if that thing happens, oh, Laurie's shaking his head.
Sorry, I thought you were going to say obligation or option. There's no obligation or option in it, that's all.
No. There's no obligation or option to buy. But I would imagine if Dean Henderson does prove worthy of the extra 3 or 4 points that keeps Nottingham Forest up, they might ask to keep hold of him. I think the interesting thing with that loan deal is Forest seemed to be able to cover a decent percentage of Dean Henderson's wages, which is a lot more money than I thought Nottingham Forest had when they got promoted. So,
welcome to the Premier League.
Indeed. I think that's really good for Dean Henderson. There is an alternate reality where he didn't get injured on Euro 2020 duty, and he probably pushes Jordan Pickford for that number one spot. You know, he could have also not got COVID, and who knows what would have happened at the start of the season as well. So he's had a really unfortunate 12, 13, 15 months. And it'll be good to see him play some first team football, because I know he's good enough to be a Premier League football player. I just don't know where in the table he can be. So I think that's good for him.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that, to be fair, because he's had his moments in a Manchester United shirt, good and bad in that sense. And of course, he's shone very brightly on loan at Sheffield United. And this feels like a similar move in terms of the profile of the club. Andy, you wrote in the past about Chelsea's interest. You talked about it certainly on the podcast. Do you think that's why United have got no option or obligation in there? Because they still feel like if Henderson has a successful season on loan at Forest this year, his value is going to be a lot higher this time next year to sell. Or it might be that Erik ten Hag still has half an eye on him maybe for the future.
Well, he can afford to have half an eye on him. Carl's point about we don't know what his level is a good one. Is he a top four, top six Premier League goalkeeper? Or is he someone who is going to be playing for teams fighting relegation? In hindsight, United could have cashed in at points in the past. He's had quite a lot of luck against him, Dean Henderson. And I spoke to Alan Fettis, who worked with Dean Henderson probably more than any other goalkeeping coach. And Alan's just left the club and gone to Middlesbrough as their main goalkeeping coach. And he's pretty glowing about Dean Henderson. And he said if it wasn't for Dean Henderson, David De Gea wouldn't have got back to the levels that he got to. He really needed pushing by Dean Henderson. That's not much consolation to Dean Henderson. Okay, you're pushing someone in training, but you're not playing. He needs to be playing first team football. Forest have got the Premier League money. He's going to be busy. Forest are not going to be winning the league next year. It could be a win-win for everybody. And if he establishes himself as a top goalkeeper, then he's going to get a bigger transfer fee than maybe he will get at the moment. So it could be decent business.
Andreas Pereira, Carl.
Sorry, I scoffed. Andreas Pereira is, he looks fantastic in preseason, doesn't he? I think a lot of United fans have called him the preseason Pirlo because of his, he has a fantastic knack of scoring long range finishes in preseason. And then just, I can't make heads and tails of what his best position is or what he's particularly good at when the Premier League season starts. He's had a stint on the Jose Mourinho where he played as the deepest lying midfielder. He had a stint where he played as a box-to-box on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He also had the stint just before Bruno Fernandes came in where he was a number 10. And he was okay in his most recent loan move at Flamengo, but I he's another football player of maybe your Premier League quality. I don't know where in the Premier League you are. So if Fulham want him and Marco Silva says there is something in there, then all power to them. And that looks like to be a move that is slowly progressing. I think that there is a firm interest from Fulham in the player. And it's just a case of coming to an agreement and agreeing the, you know, personal agreement and also the right number. But I think, yeah, it'll be good for Andreas Pereira to seek out a permanent move elsewhere.
It's certainly busy, Laurie, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Pereira one is an example, really, of what United need to be getting good at in terms of selling players at the right time, getting good money for them. I think, you know, if it's ultimately 10 million quid or something like that, that's a fair enough price for a player of his abilities. And but that's what United need to kind of get really good at, you know, identifying when they can sell players and getting good value for them. That's what Liverpool have done brilliantly. And they've topped up their transfer budget with those, you know, little bonuses, I suppose. And that's therefore meant that they can go and spend, you know, 80 million on Darwin Nunez, for example.
City have done the same, haven't they?
Chelsea do it well as well. So United haven't really done that all that well. I mean, Dan James was probably the one, you know, as we've spoken about before, that they kind of stood out last season. But if they can start doing that with players like Andreas Pereira, I thought he was going to go to Flamengo after his loan spell. That obviously fell through for different reasons. Fulham thing seems like a good fit for him under Marco Silva. You feel like that he could do quite well there. The Dean Henderson thing is another example. You know, United privately, I think, were scoffing at the idea that they would sell him for an obligation of or option of £20 million. They feel like he's actually worth a lot more than that. When you look at what Aaron Ramsdale went for to Arsenal and he got relegated that season, Dean Henderson did better, really, with Sheffield United. So that's kind of a barometer for there. So I think that ultimately is why it's just going to be a loan to Nottingham Forest. I think that will get confirmed once he's back from holiday. He got married whilst he's been away. But United do need to get good at this kind of thing. And it's a difficult task, clearly, because, you know, a lot of clubs will look at Man United and think, well, you've got loads of money. You don't need to sell for a certain amount of, you know, I don't know, you can afford to give him to us, this player, for a less fee than perhaps other clubs would charge. But by the same token, being a United player, just being at United, being around the club, understanding the scale of the place and having, you know, even European football experience should add value to you as a player. So I think United hopefully can get better at that aspect of the game.
Andy, obviously we've had the first glimpses of Erik ten Hag on the training pitch this week at Carrington with the Manchester United squad. I wonder if you've heard anything yet about how the first few days have gone. I think one of the interesting aspects has been just how many players have been involved in the first team. There's a real sense that he's having a good look at as many people as he feels possible. There's kids of 16, 17 in that group.
I love to see a coach on the grass. That's what he's best at. When I speak to people about him, they talk of him, first of all, about being a coach, not about his charisma with the media, not about his language skills, not about his devilment. A coach on the grass, and we're seeing evidence of that, and Manchester United have needed that. All power to his elbow. You'll have loads of players jockeying for position. Some of them will think that they've got a clean start under the new manager, and actually they will have as well. If a player's doing really well in pre-season, then he'll give them a chance, and we probably could name some more than others. I think I'd be really interested to see how Donny van de Beek does under Erik ten Hag, for example. And yeah, he's been in there for a few days. We're going to get to speak to him when we're on the pre-season tour. I'm sure we're going to get stories of the players being fitter, of them developing an understanding with the coach. And that's all great, but that can also disappear within a week of the season started when results don't go your way. But I'm not hearing anything bad about him, just good stuff. And I think a change of air, a change of manager, he's got an able assistant. I think there will be more changes as well on the coaching side. So I won't be surprised if we heard more news, maybe more coaches coming in, departing. There's been more change this summer at Manchester United than any summer I can remember. And I've been covering this team for well over 30 years. So they're not going to stop either. But he'll be judged on results, won't he? He can be the best coach in the world in terms of the players saying he's great, he's great, he's great. If you're losing home matches, then patience is going to start with you fairly quickly.
Kyle, I know you're looking at a piece about some of the young players and who we might be able to see on pre-season for the first time or a first meaningful sight in first-team action under the new manager. I know you've not released that piece yet, but can you give us a flavour of who you think might be worth keeping an eye on?
So this is a team-wide effort from The Athletic. We're all being asked to feed into, say, which young player you think is going to be really good at pre-season. So the criteria is they've got to be under the age of 21 and they've got to have played fewer than 150 Premier League minutes for the senior team. Top of my head, I thought Garnacho really, really fits the criteria. I mean, at current point in time, he's the third choice number nine for Manchester United. If you think it's Ronaldo, Martial, and then probably Garnacho. So I think he will probably get a decent amount of game time. I think it's also quite interesting that he's turned up to Carrington 3 weeks early. So he could have had an extended break due to his involvement with Argentina in the, I want to say the Youth Cup, World Cup. One of the youth tournaments. It might not be the World Cup, please forgive me. But he's decided to turn up early so Ten Hag can get a look at him, which I think is quite nice. I've talked on this podcast frequently about Hannibal, and I'm really interested to see what Ten Hag makes of him and also to see what sort of position Ten Hag thinks is his future, because if you talk to the Tunisian FA, he's a Luka Modric-style central midfielder, but also if you talk to Neil Wood in under-23s, he's more of a number 10 and a winger, and then possibly can play in that deeper position. So I think that's quite interesting. And then Laurie's had a fantastic chat with Neil Ryan, who just eulogized about Shola Shotaire, which I love that piece. Like, Laurie, tell me more about how much Neil Ryan loves Shola.
Are you stealing Ian's final segment of the piece here today?
Just a little bit, but I'm happy for people to segue into the new bits. That's fine.
I like it. Okay, we're fluid here, aren't we? This is the kind of fluid, kind of fast-flowing football that we're hoping Erik ten Hag will bring to Manchester United.
A revolving front three, even though there's four of us. Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. I mean, Neil Ryan obviously left United not too long ago at the end of the season, 19 years as a coach, onto new things with the FA. And we had just a good couple of hours together where he sat and spoke about his career. And he was quite open with me about why he was moving on. But also, yeah, as you say, some of the younger players that he thinks have got a good chance. He's quite a hard character to please. He's certainly not somebody that just eulogises for the sake of it. So that's why I think his praise of Shola Shoretire was quite pronounced, really. I mean, he did say he's got stuff to improve on, for sure. And he definitely has. You know, I don't think he's kicked on perhaps in the way that we would have hoped this season. But then again, I think it's because he's been playing in an under-23s team that's been very young, really. So it's not necessarily a team that's going to be winning every week and he's going to be able to flourish. But no, I was impressed with what he said about his character, his mentality. He looks quite slight, but he's a very strong player on the pitch, doesn't get brushed off too often. And yeah, psychologically, I think he's quite a strong guy. He's got a background where he's moved around a little bit, and that, I think, it establishes a bit of character about you. So he thought that he could be one that Erik ten Hag takes a look at in pre-season, and I'd be interested if he does so.
He looks as if he's bulked up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was the first set of photos of players turned up at Carrington. Shoretire looks like he's found the leg machine, shall we say. His calves are noticeably bigger. I say that stuff and I realise how absurd my job is in that I can tell football players on the size of their calves.
Some people look into that more than others, Carl. We'll leave that there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right, we've had quite a few people very nicely getting in touch since the podcast last week. A few people asking about what the schedule is going to be over the summer and when they can look out for the podcast each week. So the plan is going to do it So the plan is going to do... So the plan is going to be... Oh my God. So the plan is going to be doing one a week, which seems quite thankful considering it's took me four times to say that sentence. And it's going to be on a Thursday. So keep your eyes peeled each Thursday evening-ish, late afternoon, for a new Talk of the Devils. And of course, then we'll return to two a week once the season gets closer. Perhaps we'll do a little tease while Laurie and Andy are away on pre-season as well, of a couple of podcasts a week, depending on how the matches are going and the news connected with Manchester United. But of course, that wasn't the only thing that people got in touch about. Thank you very much, everyone, for messaging, whether it's commenting on the feed, on the Athletic app, or on Twitter. Nathan Kirkham, Andy, very nicely, sent us a picture of Soreen on sale in Dubai, which I thought was a great drop.
Fantastic. I also had other people get in touch about Soreen, saying, it's still in Urmston. I said, are you sure? The factory wasn't there. He went, no, it's just moved to Trafford Park. My girlfriend's in the sales there. So we need to establish whether Malt Loaf is still made in Urmston, which is really close to Old Trafford. But great to hear that it's on sale in Dubai, and also that people are listening to this around the world.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan, for sending that picture in. Let us know if you've sampled any amaretto in Adelaide or Benny and Hot in Hong Kong, even. It'd be great to hear from everyone on that. And Carl, you are smiling at the minute, but there's a real bone of contention, young man, that we have to talk about.
Yes.
Do you remember the crapshoot thing last week? Did you see the messages about it?
I did not.
No, right. So on the podcast last week, you said that the article about Manchester United's striker options in the transfer market this summer was a bit of a crapshoot.
Yes.
I didn't know what it was, so I asked you at the time what you said it was. And your rough definition was widespread throwing at the wall and seeing what sticks. Now, at least three people, very angry, got in touch to say that they're not happy with that exact definition of crapshoot. So it's time to shout out Finn, Tony Butterworth, and humble country lawyer, who doesn't sound like a man that you want to annoy on the definition of things, to be fair.
Oh, blimey.
I'm just going to go through the message now to tell you what they insisted the exact definition was. So, Tony Butterworth says, Andy and Carl, a crapshoot is a reference to the randomness of a dice thrown in gambling game craps. Not whatever Carl tried to say. And humble country lawyer, the one that you don't want to annoy, said crapshoot comes from the table game craps. It just means a dice roll coming down to pure luck. So does that still apply to Manchester United's striking search?
A little bit. My apologies for my wrong definition of a crapshoot. But I still think Manchester United's chances of getting a striker are a bit of a crapshoot.
There you go.
I think it just about works, doesn't it? I think that still is the essence of what Carl was getting across. And I love that people have gone to the trouble of telling us the exact definitions. I'm really fascinated to find out exactly where these sayings come from. So thank you for that, guys.
Yeah, it's great to have people in touch over the summer as well. It shows that they're listening, Andy, if nothing else, doesn't it?
Yeah, and picking us up on all the little idiosyncrasies. And it's mental when you're outside the ground and someone comes up to you and says, I've just been drinking a Benny and Hot because they're listening to the podcast. So I'm all for that, a bit of the light humour.
Yeah, Carl, did you have... go on, Laurie, sorry.
I was just going to say, yeah, what were our festival drinks of the choice? You know, Primavera, what was on sale?
Ooh, a lot of Estrella on tap. I had a lot of gin and tonics and a very nice Aperol Spritz tent that wasn't occupied by as many members of the populace. So I had a couple of Aperol Spritz. I think it's quite funny how that's now the in vogue drink, where, you know, no one was drinking 5 years ago. Everyone was drinking it.
Andy had lager, didn't you, Andy?
Yeah. I think it could only have been worse if I said I had a pint of mild there, didn't it? I sound really old-fashioned. I do like a mojito in the summer, and I also like... is it Hickard, Pernod and a bit of water? But I probably have it like Ooh. Twice a year. Yeah, I think it's one part Pernod, five part water. Pastis, isn't it? That's what the French drink in Marseille.
You're not having many of them, lad.
He has one trip on a cruise ship and now he's having Pernod.
Yeah, I've had that a bit. But,
absolute rocket fuel, that stuff as well.
I drove to Primavera, so I was actually drinking water. And my daughter's like, why aren't you having beer? So I'm getting called a lightweight by an 11-year-old. This is what my life's come to.
Perfect. That seems a good place to leave it. Laurie, Andy, Carl, thank you so much for being with us as always. Don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. We're going to be here every Thursday throughout the summer. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.